When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Brandon Ayuk showed up to practice for the second day in a row, and Trent Williams is nowhere to be found. We will discuss all that and more next on the Coach's Meeting. What's up? Good afternoon. That's the coach. I'm Grant Cohn. This is the coach's meeting, and we got a lot to talk about today. Today was supposed to be the joint practice. The Niners canceled that, supposedly because of injuries, but we're going to talk about why else they may have canceled it. We're also going to talk about Nick Wright shouting out, you know, Niners YouTube, me, some other people later. Brandon Ayuk back at practice, but first, the news is about Trent Williams. We've been asking for an update. We got an update. Courtesy of Diana Russini of The Athletic, who says there is no update with Trent Williams. No progress, at least now. Is it time to get concerned?
Dirty Diana! We got the Diana Russini report. I feel like right now Trent is really... I'm kind of giving this kind of like a small microcosm of what the Nick Bosa deal kind of gave us, where there was not a lot of news. Nick had all the leverage. The Niners knew he had all the leverage. Overtures were very conservative, right? Things were not getting out. And all of a sudden in the 11th hour, the deal got done. We have to remember where Trent is in his career. And let's just say it. You said it. I've said it. We've all pretty much leaned on it, is that Trent doesn't want to go through training camp, right? He wants to be able to show up and play and actually just be a practitioner of the team. As a starting left tackle, he really doesn't have any interest on putting his body through another camp. And right now, it seems as though that if you were the Niners, the only hangup that they would have is, one, getting the money together, which they have. We have $33 million in cap space, so it can get done. But at the same time, they need to set a precedent, right? Like, are we going to be doing one-offs? Is this like the new Trent MO where every year we have to go through this entire guaranteed money charade with you, where you hamstring the team and we really can't pace out in the future? That is not the way we do business with the Niners. I mean, look at what we've done with all our contracts. We wait and we always gather as many assets and opportunities as possible. And this straight, sterile, like quid pro quo, like you give me a year, you give me guaranteed money. I just don't think that that's something that we can sustain on our books.
I agree. And I think we don't know exactly what Trent Williams wants. Diana Russini says he hasn't gotten the guaranteed money that he wants, but we don't know how much guaranteed money he wants. Like, let's say he wants a raise this year and more guaranteed money this year. It seems to me that's doable. But right, if he wants guaranteed money next year, 2025, like that's what the Niners gave Christian McCaffrey. He wanted a new deal. He wanted guaranteed money. They guaranteed some this year and like more than $8 million next year. If that's what Trent wants too, I could understand why the Niners would hesitate or not want to do it, because it's scary to guarantee a contract next year for a player who's going to be 37 and maybe considering retirement already.
Mm-hmm. I understand completely. I mean, right now, if I were the Niners, then we would have to do something in the form of maybe a 2-year deal, something where you get the guaranteed money, but you know, you give us guarantees on the back end that you're not just going to fly the coop after a year. I mean, it kind of feels like the Niners want Trent to be here long enough so they can find his replacement. Doesn't it feel that way?
What a concept.
Something is wild. I mean, maybe we could have did it this year, but you know, right now, Trent has seen it. I mean, if I'm the Niners, this is just another opportunity that, in my opinion, they kind of let slip out of the door. You know, while you were doubling down on the Brandon Ayuk situation, never in your wildest dreams did you think that Trent would pull this. On top of the fact of CMC did it, and you made it happen so fast, right? Even to the point of showing up at the wedding, like Jesus Christ. I mean, talk about rolling over. Like, you guys gave him exactly what he wanted. On top of, Christian McCaffrey was already the highest paid running back in the league. You just doubled down on it. So you think that Trent Williams is not going to sit back and look at the blunder of you not getting his replacement in the most talented tackle, at least tackle, offensive tackle draft in the last 20 years. I mean, this was a 10-year draft.
You're watching the coaches meeting powered by BetUS. If you just tuned in, there is an update with Trent Williams. Again, this is the coaches meeting powered by BetUS. And if you just tuned in, there's an update. And the update is there's no update with Trent Williams. It's big news. A lot of people are talking about it, man. This is crazy down here in Santa Clara. This is funny. Like, I appreciate Diana calling and saying something because we asked, but a lot of times these newsbreakers that, like, their whole business is I break news. Like, I'm not like a personality, or I just break news, and they have to have something in the news at once a week. So you see something from Ian Rappaport, Mike Garofolo, Adam Schefter, and it's like, oh, you have nothing today. You just wanted to be talked about. You wanted to put your name out there in the news. It's not really about the news they're breaking. It's about themselves.
So, 100%.
Thank you, Diana.
Right. I mean, they just want to be able to say, like, I'm the person that's here to let you know that there's nothing else going on right now. But let's virtue signal to the fact that I was told.
Yeah,
the latest update.
And that's an update. If I say, boy, nothing's going on with Trent Williams, people be like, well, what do you know? But Diana Rossini says, well, that's news. That is breaking. Stop what you're doing and react. Here's my instant reaction. Wow. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, but we've paced it out. I mean, you would have thought by now there'd be enough real football, or at least enough news of real football, for us to kind of like get out of this type of reporting. But this is kind of it, Grant. Like, you know, at first there used to be kind of like smoke and bubbles and snake oil salesman reporting snake oil salesman reporting because it was the dead period, quite frankly. It was like nothing really going on. But no, like, we're in the throes of the season, like, coming up right now. And you're still going to see reports like this all throughout the year. I mean, this is where we are right now.
Absolutely. Gammon Brown says, show us your sneaker game. Okay. I will.
What are we doing?
So George says, I wear Vans every day. That's just factually incorrect. I wear Vans some days. So I don't want people to think that, like, I stopped wearing Vans because George bullied me. Like, I don't wear the same shoes every day. I don't know where he got that. So today I wear Vans, which I think are classy. You know, because I knew David was going to go with the low top white shoes, and I knew it was going to be Cole Hans, which really have like about as much seasoning and sauce as, you know, unseasoned chicken. So I figured I'd bring in a little, you know, with the V. And, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I went with today. And tomorrow I'll probably bring the Crocs. Those are nice.
72 and 10s. You know what I'm saying? Some 11s.
72 and 10s. The 11s. Yeah. We're talking 96.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that he said it. I'm like, wait a minute. We put it on. We puts it on.
Own's worst adversary says, bro saw Fields play and said, never mind. There's probably something to that. Let's talk about Brandon Ayuk. It's been a weird saga with him making appearances at camp. Early on in camp, there was Dapgate. There was Brohuggate. Then he really went back into his fortress of solitude for about 2 weeks, and there was reports that he was about to get traded, and then there's new reports that he's about to get signed, and all of a sudden, 2 days in a row at practice, yesterday wearing red, today wearing black and white. What do you think Mr. Cryptic is trying to convey to the team and to the people who watch the team by standing out there the way he has the last 2 days? What does it mean? What does it all mean, Coach?
I think that he wants to convey that he's in control. I think that Brandon has, throughout all of these times, throughout the offseason, I feel like we've been misinterpreting a lot of the messaging from Brandon Ayuk. And now that we've kind of gotten all of the whodunits out of the way and the real numbers are starting to float around with the years involved, then you start to realize that really what this is the 49ers tried to give Brandon Ayuk a Deebo Samuel deal. 3 years later, and $24 million per for a receiver ain't cutting it. Brandon Ayuk saw the deal and then recognized that, you know, the Niners are not being honest brokers in what they're trying to do. So he stood firm. While he stands firm, the market explodes and it just goes into exactly what he wants to do. The Niners panicked and put him on the trade block, hoping that there would be some teams that would actually kind of match what they were offering Brandon, and they overshot the market. You know, with the Patriots offering 32, and it's already been reported that the Browns offered upwards of 30 million. So right now, the Niners have no more cards to play. It's clear as day that right now, even if they tried to trade, any trade that they do right now in August, right before the season, we're taking a loss, no matter what it is. I don't care what type of compensation we get. It's not going to be as good as losing Brandon Ayuk, right? And right now, it's damn near to a position where we're just waiting for the Niners to hurry up and bend the knee. Just bite the pillow and get it over with. You guys, let this fester. You should have got on top of it. If you were serious about it, you would have got him out of here during the draft and picked up a replacement receiver or a tackle, but you didn't. And you thought that the market was going to be able to lean towards where you had started at in negotiations, but it overshot and it went bigger. And you guys, you waited on your heels. And right now, you don't have any leverage. The Niners, and on top of it, BA comes out and says, I'm not going to play on a fifth-year option. So it's like, now, what are the Niners going to do? Like, are we really going to blow up the locker room and have this cloud over the season throughout the entire year because we're in a standoff? So the Niners right now, they're cooked. They got to pay them.
Okay, I got a theory. Tell me what you think. Right. And I don't know, but I'm trying to figure it out. He was away for a while. He's back. I think the Niners, it's been reported they upped their offer to him. He hasn't accepted it yet. So clearly it's not exactly what he wants. It's not quite as good as Pittsburgh. But instead of like being disgruntled or showing that he's upset, he's there. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me he's saying, without saying it, I want to be here.
I want to be here, yeah.
I want to be here, as opposed to Trent Williams, who is asking for more money, who's asking for money too. It almost feels like Trent and Brandon are competing for the 49ers' attention, competing for cap space. And Trent's saying, you know, I don't have to be here. I don't have to be on this team. I'm not going to show up. I might retire, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Where Brandon's like, no, I want to be here. Right. We're so close. I'm the guy to invest in. Forget Trent. He's 36. He's not really all in with the team. Like, that's my best guess.
Do you think that this is an either or situation?
If you were a player, wouldn't you wonder, like, is it going to come down to me or him? Do they really have enough money for both of us when they're telling me that they don't even have enough money for me because of Brock next year? Like, I'd wonder.
I mean, that could be the canary in the coal mine. Like, the fact is that they really don't know what they're going to do with Trent. And that's why they're so sheepish on getting Brandon done. Well, if we know that's the case, then we absolutely understand that the only reason why they were trying to move Brandon is probably because Kyle was out on Brandon emotionally, like it was personal. Yeah. But you know, for what it's worth, I would take Brandon over Trent if we had to do it. For what it's worth, pay Brandon, right? He's our youngest star.
10 years younger.
And you might as well rip the band-aid off now. We have offensive line that we're going into the year with, and we're just gonna have to move on from Trent and, you know, live the fight another day. It's actually something that I kind of would like, because at least it just happened quick. We didn't pace it out. And now we'll go into the next year's draft looking for our next left tackle, which they should have did this year, right? And you know what? The irony of all of this, Ricky Pearsall and Cowing aren't doing anything. Mm-mm. Like that. That's really what exacerbates this for Brandon. Like, honestly, just on some petty, to be petty Betty, I just want to go to practice just to look at the receiver struggling. I just be there. Like, this is amazing. Where's that first round pick?
Yeah.
Where's he at?
Yeah.
You know, the guy that you tried to use as leverage to get me to take $24 million, where's that guy at? Mm-hmm. Oh, he's hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not playing. Oh, okay. You guys look good, though. Ready for week one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
he's got to know when you want me. I'm here. I'm ready to go. Let me know when you stop playing. Yeah. Let me know when you stop playing.
You know what I'm saying? I'm ready to start the season. Are you? Because we can just hurry up and get this done.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I wonder if it's premeditated and he's trying to stand out and be different from Trent, who's taking the other tack. Like, I don't necessarily have to be here. I'm not necessarily dying to be on this team. You got to make it worth my while.
Yeah, I mean, and then also Trent's working on multiple deals. I think this would be Trent's third deal that he's had since he's been in the NFL. So right now, you know, Trent is looking from a perspective of, I need a golden parachute. Like, I need a good old severance package to get out of here and some guaranteed money. All right. We rah-rahed and shish kimbad. We did it all. We did it for the Gipper. We went to the Super Bowl and all that good stuff. All right. But at the end of the day, it's time for me to get up out of here with my cheese the right way. So, you know, I'm over the, you know, it's almost like, if you are Trent, you got to ask yourself, if you've played as long as he has and you've gone to multiple NFC championships games, you went to the Super Bowl, it's kind of like, you've been there, you've done that. It's about the money now. It's like, yeah, I need to get set up.
Yeah. Keneal Mason says, Grant, when are you going on First Things First? Have Nick Wright come on a show too. It'll do numbers. We're going to talk about Nick Wright's assessment of me and 49ers YouTube in general. Amaya says, Grant, Kevin Wilds clowning on you. Who's Kevin Wilds? Is he on First Things First?
Yeah, Wilds. Yeah.
Wilds. Okay. Wilds. Well, I've never heard of Kevin Wilds, but I'm sure he's great.
He's like the soccer mom of that show.
He's the soccer mom of that show? Okay, I can take that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as it's not Chris Broussard or Nick Wright, I'm good. Yeah. Damon Brown says, pull a Jim Harbaugh and wear cleats. It's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
Vincent Campos says, I'm late to the show. Is Grant wearing Vans again? No. Wearing a different V shoe. See if you can figure it out. All right. Let's take a minute to acknowledge our sponsor, BetUS, which is really the number one sports book on the internet because they have the fastest payouts in the industry. They got 125% sign-up bonus up to $2,000 on your first three deposits, not one, not two, three. They have fast and easy deposit and withdrawal process. And if you want to check it out, check out my BetUS link in the description below for 24/7 personalized service every day of the year, live wagering on all major games, best betting variety in the business, 10% back on your net losses twice a year. And did you know that BetUS can give you your very own personal account manager? That's right. So here's what BetUS looks like. We're on their website. They are so thorough. They have betting lines for the preseason because there's no better bet in sports than preseason gambling. No question.
They've come so far. I'm so proud of BetUS.
You see what I'm saying? So we got Niners Saints, Niners at home. It's a pick'em game. It could go either way, coach. How are you sort of handicapping this one?
I mean, well, did the Niners have enough healthy players to even have a game? I mean, are we going to put together? I mean, we don't have enough to have practice. So I don't know. Maybe it's the Saints. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Niners should start off fast. You know, their starters are going to play a little bit, but they just don't have the depth right now. And once the third stringers come in, I just don't know if I trust Josh Dobbs, you know, or Tanner Mordecai. Yeah.
Tanner Mordecai is a guy who I think may have a chance to beat out Josh Dobbs. I think they're going to play more of Tanner Mordecai this game.
Tanner Mordecai. Okay. Mordecai. We're going Saints because that's a smart play. Let's see what else we got regular season-wise because, you know, that's really the only game that we're looking for. Let's see if the week one line has changed. Week one, supposed to be 5-point favorites. Still 5-point favorites. I guess the odds makers don't think that Trent Williams is going to miss that game. What do you think? Over under 44.5, Niners -5. What do you think about that spread?
They obviously think it's going to be a close game. I think so too. It's going to be a defensive game. I got still winning. I take the Niners
and the points
and the score and the points.
What about the over under 44.5?
I take the under.
See, that's the one I like. Two really good defenses, and a 49ers offense that's got some question marks right now. How about Rams Lions week one, Sunday Night Football in Detroit, Lions -3.5?
Rams. Yeah.
Rams in the points. Why you like the Rams?
I think the Rams, they're dangerous when they respect the run, but I feel like they actually have a run game now and they've tooled into their offensive line. They've got two running backs now with Blake Corum and what's my boy's name? Number 5. They're running back. Kerwin. What's the kid's name? The running back.
Yeah, that guy. He's great.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. What's his face?
Yeah, he's really good.
I like what the Rams are going to do, possibly.
All right, let's place these bets. The thing about that game is the Lions are pretty good at home or when they're indoors. So I'm curious to see how they play in that one. But the Rams are also tough. Kyron, I'm putting down 110 to win 100 because that's how I do over at BetUS. And boom, my bets are placed. So I just want you to take a minute to acknowledge Michael Vick.
Michael Vick here at BetUS.com. Get it all. Huge bonuses, great odds, a race book, live in-game betting, and a casino. BetUS. My online sports book and casino.
Okay, so Silky Smooth Smithers says anyone can rock Nikes, but not everyone can rock Vans. Kittle is hating, no doubt about it. Grant knows game. Well, Vans are a very California thing. He's from Iowa and lives in Nashville. You, from Baltimore. How do you feel about Vans?
I'm from DC. Pardon me. And Vans are like an everyday shoe. Vans are like, the way I see Vans are, there's every stage of Vans where they're going to be okay depending on how you're wearing them. So you can have brand new Vans with an outfit and they can look great. But then you can have worn in Vans and be a skater and it perfectly fits your mystique.
Absolutely.
Like you're wearing Vans and they're a skater shoe. So it's kind of like a use case. So it's like if you see beat up Vans, it's not the same thing as seeing like beat up Jordans. Like beat up Vans have like a mystique to them because you know they're supposed to look that way. It's almost like leather, like a leather bag. Like
I agree.
The more it gets worn in, the more it's supposed to look exactly how you want it. So that's how I see Vans. It's
do you own any Vans?
Yeah, I own a pair of Vans.
Are we talking slip-ons or do they have laces?
Laces. Yeah.
I like the laces. I think it's a nice look, although I will rock a slip-on from time to time.
Yeah, I can't do slip-ons, man. I just
they're a little tight. Sometimes you gotta break them in.
Yeah, but George, I mean, it's hilarious how he just takes on fashion being from Iowa. It's like get a couple of tattoos and you just think you like Jesus Christ, man. Like, we need to go to the denim suit that you wore last season? The matching denim suit that you and your wife wore? Like, come on, man. You guys,
yeah. Like no offense, but people who live in Nashville have the worst fashion. And not to take too many shots, Kittle is a Nashvillian, didn't grow up in Nashville. No one that lives in Nashville grew up in Nashville. They're all people that kind of like the idea of the South without really wanting to go too deep into it. You know who else is like that? Mm-hmm. Lombardi. He lives in Nashville. He wears cowboy boots sometimes under his jeans. I mean, that's what I'm talking about when I talk about Nashville. Lombardi, also, Kittle.
There is something to the fact of staying to a style from like where you're from.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so Vans are like something where I could see somebody wearing Vans, like literally that is their day-to-day shoe. Like
that's my day-to-day shoe.
California. Yeah. And it's like it.
But once you start wearing cowboy boots day-to-day and you grew up in Oakland or Fresno, I have questions.
I can't trust you.
I can't trust you at all. Like integrity is a factor at that point. Last Second Sports says every pretentious a-hole I've ever met were Cole Hans. Mm-hmm. Do with that info what you will. I just want to say that I completely predicted this yesterday. Someone said that David wears shoes with Velcro straps. I was like, no. He would shop at Nordstrom and get low top white sneakers. And boom, he did that later that day.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely an ankles guy. I'm not going to wear socks. My ankles look good today.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a good point.
Because my thin ankles accentuate my calves. He's kind of like a boy short down kind of guy.
Oh, dude, he's a loafer and no socks guy. He's a top side.
Definitely loafer, no socks. You know, David strikes me as the guy who plays with his loafer on the tip of his toes while he crosses his legs.
Yes.
That guy.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of like clapping it against the heel of his foot.
Yeah, it just has no problem with just dangling his loafer as he's having a serious conversation about economics and what's going on today and things need to be strict.
Optionality.
Like as that shoe keeps going, just like, dude, you're wafting with the loafer. Relax.
Thank you, Last Second Sports. Let's talk Nick Wright. Nick Wright, big friend of the show. Haven't had him on yet. Would like to have him on. Hope he has me on soon, but he shouts me out like every other day because he has, I'm not saying an axe to grind against Brock Purdy, but he has a strong opinion about Brock Purdy that he's no good. And he uses me as his evidence all the time. So today, did it again, read an excerpt of my practice report from yesterday, and which I appreciate, and basically said, look, like there's a full phenomenon with the Niners. You got Grant Cohn, David Lombardi. They report on the same player in opposite ways. Grant is really pessimistic about him, like Nick is what he said. And David thinks he's the second coming of Tom Brady. There is some truth to that, but I would like to push back a little. Can I raise my hand and say, I think Nick Wright is way more down on Brock than I am. I think Nick Wright talks about Brock the way I talked about Jimmy. And for the record, I actually think Brock is very good. I wouldn't give him $60 million, but I think he's better at his job than Kyle, and I don't think Nick would feel that way. So I just wanted to point that out.
No, I agree. That's the first thing we said when we talked about this, is that I think that this is what happens when you have a national outlet who watches combined maybe an hour's worth of content on an environment that is persistent. I know that people love dipping into like Niners culture, but if I think that we've been here long enough where if you don't really know like who Grant is, who David is, who Larry is, who Brad is, and have been there through the literal hundreds of thousands of hours that we've poured in, then you can't just give a quick synopsis as if like that's what it is. Because like you said, if you talk, I think you're very balanced on Brock, to be honest. Like if you covered Brock the way you covered Jimmy, I think that would be more apt. Like you pile drived on Jimmy.
I was like disrespectful. I didn't take him seriously at all.
Off the third turn,
Brock seriously.
You used to go hard on Jimmy. Yeah. Like
this guy isn't worth like actual serious analysis. Like Brock is. He's worth that.
Yeah. Brock is there. You know what? That's the point.
Yeah.
Brock, Jimmy had gotten so bad at one point that he wasn't worth analysis. It was just Jimmy's going to Jimmy. We know what this is. I'm not going to waste my time trying to explain why water is wet. Brock actually forces you to assess him. He's actually a base. He has a base. He's a good quarterback. I don't think that was.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Accurate. I don't think that you are so beyond the pale on Brock that you can't listen to him. Now, I feel like sometimes the irony is that for him to say that, for Nick Wright to say that you aren't balanced or you go off the rails on Brock, I would argue that that's more Nick Wright. Wright is more, his own commentary of Brock is way more off the rails and like fringe than your coverage of Brock, because really what he's doing is he's using your commentary to support his facts. But the context of what he's trying to say is not that what we're saying, which is Brock has to be able to show us that he deserves to be the franchise quarterback of the 49ers, and that, you know, we're looking at it from a pragmatic standpoint of, hey, we got to pay this guy. So is Brock going to be worth the money? Nick has been kicking and screaming on Brock even being a valid quarterback.
Right. He thinks he's a complete mirage.
Thinks he's a complete hoax, which is like nowhere close to the reporting that we do. Yeah. We don't feel that way. So it was just ironic how he categorized your coverage of Brock while not realizing that his own stance on Brock is way more extreme.
Now, I don't think Brock's necessarily a top 10 quarterback, and I do feel like there are a lot of quarterbacks who could succeed in this position. But the improvisational ability, the mobility, the escapability, the way he can get away from pressure, mm-hmm. the way he can extend plays, his scrambling ability, the mm-hmm. way he gets through his progressions – mm-hmm. all that stuff's legit. And I think people that are focused on his arm strength is the reason why he's not as good as his numbers say. Is like, I feel like modern NFL with defense is so concerned about giving up the deep pass and playing two deep safeties all the time that arm strength isn't as big of a deal. It's important. It's a nice asset to have, but I mean, Tua is successful. I don't think you need to have the strongest arm in the world to be good.
I look at it as like being a caddy of a golfer. You know, you should know what's in your bag. Like, yeah, you should know what clubs are in your bag. And the course is the course. And if you don't got it, if you don't got a nine iron, you don't have it. It's just not in your bag. So you got to figure out how to beat the course. So that's Kyle's job, quite honestly. You should know what, you know, what your athlete can do.
Yeah, like I would say there's no driver in Brock Purdy's bag, but he's got a three wood. He's got a hybrid. He's got the irons. He's got every club except the big 340-yard drive.
Yeah, he does not have that drive.
He's still very accurate.
And his putting game, we just got to work on his putting game.
I mean, his short game's pretty good. You know, I mean, clearly he's getting good scores, just not the sexiest product.
So let me ask you this, because I think that you can answer this question better than anybody right now.
Because I've been golfing for 3 months.
Because you've been golfing, so your hobby is there.
Sure.
Explain Brock as a golfer. Explain Brock's game, what his game would be like if you guys played together. And this is a guy that you played with for a couple of times, and it's like, this is my guy. What's he play? What's his game like?
Okay, so like he seems a little conservative off the tee, to the point where you're almost like, come on, buddy, like you're not even gonna take out your driver, like you're gonna pull out your three wood right now. Like, we're all trying to hit it 300 plus yards, and you're just gonna settle for like a 250 yard shot down the fairway. And so like you kind of scoff at him, like, oh, this guy's the best player out here. Like, you can't even hit it as far as me, bro. Like, I'm not driving you. And then it's just like every hole, it's like, oh, par for Brock, birdie for Brock, par for Brock. And it's like, oh, I just lost another ball because I was swinging really hard. Damn, this guy's consistent.
He's steady.
And he's like coaching you while you're out there. Like, that was a good shot, man. That was really good. I liked it. Really even keel. And he pisses you off with his niceness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Not talking crap. He's like putting his arm around you. He's almost your caddy. Like, I think you might want to go with your four iron here. Like, Brock, shut up. We're not friends. And I'm trying to beat you.
Okay. Yeah. So you're trying to get away from it, but I'm going to stick you to it. Tell me about the parts of his game where he would struggle, where you could see him having a bad day. You try to get away from it.
Well, he's got the best caddy. He's got the best clubs. He's got like $1,000 putter. I mean, all of his clubs are just phenomenal.
I see what you're doing.
You know, okay. He plays on the same course every freaking day, which he knows very well.
Okay.
But if you take him out of his comfort zone and give him some regular clubs and take away his caddy, how's he going to do? I wonder. Because he seems like he has a lot of advantages.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, see what happens if he has to play the city course instead of that. You know what I'm saying?
And he's a country club guy.
Okay.
He's a country club guy. He's good when it's sunny. He's good when it's about 75 degrees. But if it's, it's a little windy out there, all of a sudden, God.
The range finder goes awry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's the kind of guy who's like, he's so good that he pisses you off. And he's like, well, I just lost to him again. I don't know why he's better than me, but he's better than me. I don't like it. I don't want to play with him anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
So now you got to try to like throw him off his game. Like, Brock, we're drinking today. Here's a shot and a beer. What do you say? And he's like, no, I can't do that. Well, I was like, well, you lost. New rules.
You got to go for the drink cart. Get the drink.
Okay. For every shot I take, you have to drink a gallon of milk. Go. You got to play mind games with someone like that. It's like they're too locked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're all avid golfers. Like, you know. Maybe we got one of these days. Somebody, you should ask Brock about his golf game.
Wouldn't you imagine that he's an excellent golfer?
I would imagine that he would be a very good golfer, like a very good golfer.
Yes, like he has the temperament for it. I'm sure he has the hand-eye coordination for it.
Yeah, and he's got that baseball background.
Absolutely, absolutely. Colin Anthony says, speaking of Kittle, Kyle doesn't get enough heat for wasting Kittle's prime. He broke the tight end record for yards with CJ Beathard as his quarterback. His production should be in the Kelce realm every year. We don't talk about this very much, but I agree with every single word of that super chat. Ever since Deebo Samuel joined the team, Kyle has sort of lost interest in George Kittle. But yeah, he could have put up better numbers in his career for sure.
Well, I feel like Kyle is George has been doing a phenomenal job for Kyle in just a lot of different areas. I mean, keeping us as the leading rushing team in the NFL with a myriad of backs. That's because of George. A lot of this outside zone, wide zone initiatives that we run, the point of attack and like getting out there and making sure that those double teams and climbing up and arc releasing, all of that stuff. George does that stuff routinely. And it's hard. If you notice, there's not a lot of dual guys that play tight end. And if you are a dual guy, more often times than not, you're one of the best tight ends in the league. Right now, it's pretty much disjointed. Either you're a pass catcher or you're a blocker, right? So being able to do those things at a high level and to be available, you are right. I think that also, if you think about pacing through the offense, where would we be? Where would Brock be if it wasn't for George being pacing him through when he first got here? I mean, before that, if you remember, George was DOA, man. He had like maybe one touchdown catch on the entire season, finished out with like damn near 13, I think, for the whole year. So, I mean, George has been somebody that has made Kyle's passing game have syntax, actually make sense.
And I think he's been especially criminally underused in the red zone. Adam Gardner says it's hilarious. First things first, can't accurately report on Brock because they said you and Lombardi are so far apart on your Brock evaluations.
Yeah, that was BS.
I like, well, today Brock played well and I praised him. But it was funny. He was like, well, yesterday, you know, I said Brock struggled and then he wanted to check out what David wrote about Brock. And it was a 2000 word feature about Brock at Iowa. Wow.
You know, there's just people that just love that type of stuff. It is what it is, man.
He's writing the gospel of Brock.
Yeah, he's a stenographer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I am a scribe. You know, like when you go to like ancient ruins and everybody's dead, but then you see that one skeleton holding the book, like the scribe. Like, if everything goes to kaput, like. That's where they will find David in the corner, holding a Brock jersey, typing over himself. Like it's. I don't get it. You know what it is. Report
that Brock is also the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The Holy Trinity. When is that going to happen? He's everything, man.
He's more than
a quarterback. He's the Savior.
I mean, people love this stuff, bro. I don't get it.
To call him just a quarterback is really underselling him and pretty much disrespectful. I mean, this guy walks on water.
Your life together. I mean,
yeah, Gregorius Greg, good name, member for 32 months. Vincent Campos says, "What's with all the beef with David L? Provide history." Beef? What? Not at all. I just don't like the way anything about him. J Figs Ramon says Brock would can every birdie with a backwards hat. Grant calling for landing in all the out of bounds with a blazer and Vans on. That's essentially what would happen.
You would,
and he'd
not
be able to be like, "Good try,
blazer."
Grant. You dork. No, I'm not that dorky. Okay, so look, today's Thursday. I was supposed to be in Irvine. The Niners were supposed to be in Irvine. They had joint practices this week against the Saints. They've been doing joint practices. They did them last year with the Raiders in Vegas. They did them the year before that with the Vikings in Minnesota, and the year before that with the Chargers in Costa Mesa. This is an annual feature of their offseason, and they take it seriously. And this year they said they were too banged up to do it, which is an excuse. I wonder how banged up they are, really. But then we talked to Tre'Varius Ward yesterday, and someone asked him, like, so you're like really upset that you're not going to join practice, right? And he was like, no. And it was like real quiet. And I was like, why? He was like, because I want to stay at home. Like, are you kidding? Which made me think, sure, they're injured. Is it also partially the Niners don't want to do a joint practice this year, the players?
If they don't, that's disheartening. It's really disappointing. Really, there's a couple of things why you want to do joint practices, right? You want to have competitive exposure to your team. You want to be able to see what these guys can do against other players outside the guys that they've been playing up against every day for the past month, basically. And you want to also be able to have better evaluations on what these guys can do. I mean, these are missed evaluation opportunities, in my opinion. Not being able to practice against the Saints. Also, for guys that are developing, there's different phases during development that you can use, especially during joint practices where things aren't as simulated. And, you know, being able to have things that aren't assimilated, it also leads into the intensity of your preparation, which is going to go up because now you're facing other people. And that's being able to see the development side of being able to see if Jalen Graham or D Winners can handle like a game like game plan, right? Where they're being able to get pushed to be able to do things against players that they haven't seen before. And also, with the preparation, you miss an opportunity on a game simulation during practice. I mean, game simulation during preseason is cool, right? But everybody's going to be trying to get the best of what they have right now. But there's some really good football that you can have behind closed doors with the ones versus the ones that you can really gauge where your team is right now. I think that's going to be another missed opportunity. And really, another thing is just an impact on team chemistry. Being able to have the guys know that we've struck out, we've had some hard practices. I understand my twos and my threes, what they can do against other players outside of players inside of the building. It hurts us in those areas. And, you know, it's just I feel like those joint practices are kind of like some of the best opportunities during camp for you to understand what you really have as a football team. Right. Because when you're in preseason, it's just all about evaluation. It's like, let's hurry up and get everything ready for the season. There's only one more preseason game. So really, you would think that joint practices is like a sneaky way to kind of get a fourth preseason game in a way. Right. Because yep. You're being able to go against an opposing team behind closed doors. So I just think that it'd be better.
The way I look at it is like I didn't play football, but it seems like from covering it for 14 seasons, it's a bitch. It's painful. It's grueling. It's a grind. And the games are super fun. I mean, you have all those people cheering for you, but there's six other days of the week where no one's watching you and you're just running into other players. It's painful. It's exhausting. And if you think you're going to win a Super Bowl and you're on the cusp of doing something as a team you haven't done before, I've seen players, teams be like, you know what? This sucks, but we're going to embrace it and have the toughest road possible because we want to do everything in our power to make sure we give ourselves the best chance to win a Super Bowl. So if it's a joint practice, we're doing that. If we have back-to-back games on the East Coast, we're going to stay on the East Coast, even though we're going to be away from our wives and it's going to freaking suck and we don't want to be in this hotel room. But you know what? We got to give ourselves the best chance to win the Super Bowl. And it feels like that's what the Niners did last year. And this year they're like, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that at all. You know, we still want to win the Super Bowl, but not if we have to do things that are too uncomfortable, which is maybe that's the approach they need to take. But it seems like a way different approach than last year.
I agree. It seems like, you know, we talked about this while we were there. You guys felt it. I super chatted about it. The energy was down, you know, throughout all of camp, mostly. They've had maybe a couple of days, a couple of hard days. But for what it's worth, man, they're kind of above the process right now. You know, the first day of padded practice was one of the worst practices that I saw. They couldn't even get a look from the offensive line. I just want us to be able to just tie it all together with our preparation because that's not like a Niners thing to do, but that's what every team in the NFL is doing right now. So for what it's worth, I want to be able to see how we look like how we look against the Saints, because last year we couldn't stop the run against not Oakland, but Las Vegas. And what happened? You guys reported that stuff during joint practices. Like they cannot stop the run. Yeah. And we got gaslit like, oh, it's just preseason. It's like, all right, cool. We'll see.
You know, they talk about climbing the mountain. We got to climb the mountain and it's really exhausted. We know how hard it is. I like that analogy. Let's stick with it. It feels like the joint practices, stuff like that, staying on the East Coast between road games, it's like a no shortcut mentality. We know it's grueling. We know it takes months to climb this freaking mountain. We're taking the toughest road. We're not taking any shortcuts. This year it feels like we're still tired. We need to take a shortcut right now, no joint practice. And I didn't think of that until Tre'Davious Ward said it, but it's like, if Kyle took a poll of the team, who wants to go to this joint practice? And most people said no. probably cancel it and give another reason, like, oh, you know, it's just, it's not that we don't want to do it, it's that we can't do it. Like, no, it looks like you don't want to do it, which is kind of a indicative of this whole malaise, Super Bowl hangover that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it seems as though that they just really haven't bounced back, and they're just kind of moving forward in spirit, like kind of like going through the motions. Seem a little bit above the process, to be honest with you, because having joint practices is exactly what you're saying. Like, it's a trial, you know, it's like the actual like thing that you makes you feel as though like, okay, we actually had a camp. We went through joint practices. It sucked. We practiced in the heat. We went through injuries, and now we're ready and grizzled and ready for a season. It seems as though that right now it's like you're kind of moving with a position of like, we know when we'll be ready. Yep. We'll be able to turn it on when it's time to turn it on. We'll be able to flip the switch. It's time to flip the switch. And that's a dangerous precedent, man.
It feels like they're pacing themselves and the season hasn't even started yet.
Yeah.
It's like they're pacing themselves. Like last year, I think the way they lost the NFC Championship game to the Eagles, they had this whole like, we didn't get to empty the clip. We didn't get to empty the tank. We have more to give. We're so determined and so driven to prove ourselves. But they emptied the tank last year. They went to the Super Bowl. They went to overtime. And it feels like they're still on E and they're just trying to buy time. Like, yeah, they're at practice, but it's not the practices they had last year. Like, no joint practices. It feels like they're, I mean, Trent isn't even here. It feels like they're still catching their breath.
Yeah, I mean, camp is supposed to be a gauntlet, right? You're supposed to, I mean, it's a rite of passage, and not just for, it's a rite of passage, not just for the veterans, but it's a rite of passage for everyone, coaches included. You got to stand in the heat. You got to sweat through your clothes. You got to go through the nagging injuries. You got to pull.
You got to sleep in the Marriott. You got to be away from your family. Yeah.
You got to do it. Okay.
Work every day. Yeah.
And one of the biggest indicators of camp is joint practices, because it's really baptism by fire. You're going off to another remote place on top of where you are with camp. All right. And you guys are going to be able to go against guys full tilt. OK, full pads on. And you guys have to. It's the initiation of the challenge of the season to get it going. And every team needs to go through that. It feels like we're kind of shirking that responsibility this offseason. I haven't really seen them have a camp, and we'll see how that bears out.
Yeah, Game Time says you were on First Things First again. Thank you very much, Nick Wright. Drewish guy says, I'm late. Did y'all talk cap already? No. No. You missed it. What's my dad talked cap 2 days ago. Cap wants to come back in the NFL. I feel like he does
to play or to coach?
To play. Apparently, Jim Harbaugh gave him an opportunity to coach with the Chargers, and Kaepernick never got back to him.
Look, bro, being involved with let's put it like this. I played and I coached, but I had to walk away from football because football was not lifing the right way, right? It wasn't making me any money. So
yeah.
I had to move on. But my dude, if I had it my way, I would be on sidelines right now coaching, but I can't because I'm taking the best of what the opportunities are here for me. And my best opportunity to be with football right now is to stay connected with you.
Yeah.
Cover the Niners, to make the best out of every opportunity that I have. And it's afforded me great things. I feel like Kaepernick is not doing that. I feel as though that for you to say that you want to play, but then turn down a coaching position, I feel like that's both of those things are equally as valuable in your football experience. And I think he just needs to kind of loosen up a little bit and just look at things differently. Because
yeah,
him coaching would not be a bad look at all. So
I'm surprised that Harbaugh reached out to Kaepernick to be a coach. Like, I would think he'd reach out to like Alex Smith. I always thought as Alex Smith is the more cerebral one. But hey, I know Kaepernick was super smart. He was in AP classes. I think he was really good at like retention and memorizing things. You just have to want to coach to be a coach. Isn't that, you have to want to do it.
That is true.
It's a big job.
Yeah, it's a big job, but it's something that ingratiates you with the league. I mean, do you want to be in the league or do you just want to be a quarterback and play? Like, you know, perfect ain't on the menu. You ain't going to get it all back. And I think that's kind of the energy that I get from him. It's like, no, I want to play. I want to be a quarterback. I got to start.
Only starting quarterback.
Yeah, I want to start. You have to take me serious. It's just like, where's the barrier to entry for you? Like, you got to do something as well. So, I don't know.
I don't know. But good luck, Cap. You should take that job with Harbaugh.
Yeah, come on.
You got it. What are you doing, man?
And wherever, you know, Coach Harbaugh loves you. You know, you can always, like, branch out. Like, I don't get it. You know,
yeah.
I don't get it. You're not playing quarterback in the NFL anymore. That's not happening. Right?
And like, this is. Sorry.
No, this is when you start realizing that the NFL is not a league. The NFL is 32 people that all have vested interests. That's what the NFL is. All right? And 32 people can all agree that one person is not allowed in the league anymore. Like, just stop. It's not happening.
Yeah. Simple as that. Couple supers and we're out. Beatman Pete, Petey Boy says, Coach and Grant, I rock with y'all both heavy. Jesse and Papa Cone, too. I got to get you two on. Hater debate one day. SC to Cali. Let's go. All right.
Let's do it.
All right. All right, I'm out of stuff to talk about. I think the coaches meeting is going to end a little early today because you guys have been so attentive and your behavior has been impeccable. So thank you for watching and donating. Make sure you subscribe and like to the Coach's Huddle, to the Cone Zone, and check out BetUS, which is sponsoring my channel, which I love. So thank you, BetUS. Check them out. And tune in again soon. We'll be back.
I mean, I have 2 minutes that you can definitely steal if you want to talk about Phil Collins.
Against all odds. I do want to talk about Phil Collins.
I mean, let's go, dog.
So I wanted to make a video responding to George Kittle. I can't put it on YouTube because of copyright stuff, but it just was me walking and Phil Collins playing. And I think that it really conveys more emotion than any words could. I mean, anytime I need to express how I really feel, it's Phil Collins.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because not only is he a poet and a master of expressing deep emotions, but he slaps, man. I mean, wow. The way he plays the drums. Oh, my God. So,
he preaches, man. He drops bars, bro. Like, you had me listening to Against All Odds before the show. Fire, bro.
Oh, my God.
Fire.
And like, the way he can, like, build a beat and, like, get it going, like, 2 minutes into the song. When it finally drops, you're just, like, air drumming everywhere. It's just incredible.
Oh, dog, it's like God. I want a mullet with like some whitewashed jean jacket. He just takes me to the 80s.
Yeah,
like,
and just a terrible UK accent that no one can understand.
Take a look at me now. Yeah. Come on, man. Well, this is just an empty space. Come on.
Woo! Yeah.
Woo! Let's go, Phil.
Come on, Phil. Yeah. It's time for everyone to go listen to some Phil Collins, Easy Lover, Take Me Home. In the air tonight. I mean, there's so studio.
Oh, that's such a good. Come on, man.
I unironically love Phil Collins.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil is all right.
And you know, someone good, their music is frequently sampled by rappers. That's
the thing. Wait a minute. I think we got a little bit of a beef. Everybody's bringing up Peter Gabriel in the chat. Saying that he's better than Phil Collins.
Peter Gabriel better than Phil Collins? Absolutely not. Name one song Peter Gabriel made that was better than any song Phil Collins made. You can't. Sledgehammer says Jennifer Lee Chan. Okay, that was a good one. She got me there. We're done. Okay.
We're done.
No, Jennifer Lee Chan and Matt Maoko are going to start streaming in 10 minutes. I think fair enough. We've been going for 50 minutes. We're pretty much done. I think they waited, but when they heard us talking about Phil Collins, she was like, hey, can we talk Niners? And I said, yes.
We're talking Phil, Jennifer. Yeah.
Jennifer loves Phil Collins too. Cool.
All right.
Yes. Okay, we're good then. All right, we're fine. Thanks for watching. She also loves Peter Gabriel, so she's got one up on us.
All right. Oh.
See you, everyone. Thanks for watching.
Have a good one.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. But being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.